Joe Franklin, broadcasting on radio station WBAI.
It's 99.5% all natural and preservative free. WBAI FM in New York.
I love this radio station.
99.5 FM. WBAI, New York.
Hello, this is radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the Feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. Well, okay, we went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
It should be about 5 a.m., and you're listening to All The Middle Third Starts Tomorrow! Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about various things, and you can find out a little bit more about some of it by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left-hand side of the screen, and at the top it will say latest back-of-the-book program links. Click on that, and you'll get to the web page for this morning's radio program. And this is our 89th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. The top story of this week in the wide world is... On Twitter, we have rocketed up to 119 followers. Ah, people didn't know there were that many on Twitter. Gee whiz, what a tremendous number. Ah, we'll try not to let it go to our heads. The next thrill-packed episode of the WBAI local station board that you can pay rapt attention to will be held on Wednesday, May 11th at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. We did have an executive session of the WBAI local station board. We held it on Monday, April 25th. What a waste of time. That's not the official report out from it, but that's my report out from it. According to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 512,837,695 on Friday, and global deaths reached 6,233,279. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 81,311,888, And the death toll in America was 993,554. So, 2,582 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program 1 week ago. This week's death rate is essentially the same as last week's, a very slight difference. The BA2 subvariant of the Omicron variant is still the dominant one, the dominant version of COVID-19. The pandemic is not over. By the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we quoted will be higher, of course. This was all mostly preventable. We talked about the details of why the Omicron variant is so much more infectious than the previous SARS-CoV-2 variants on a program a couple of months ago. There's a longer description of why it's so much more infectious in the May issue of Scientific American. You might want to check that out if you want to learn more about it. Basically, the spikes are a little bit stronger, and this increases the odds of an individual virus being able to enter a cell more easily. And this past week, Dr. Anthony Fauci made a bit of a blunder. He said that the pandemic was over. We knew it wasn't. He then corrected himself later in the week, saying that he'd misspoken and that we're probably past the acute stage of the pandemic. But we're not at the endemic stage of COVID-19 yet. Well, this program is airing on April 30th, 2022. Tomorrow is May 1st. Yes, tomorrow begins the middle third. It's the middle third of 2022 tomorrow. And the middle third, that's my favorite 4 months of the year. It's my favorite time of the year, May, June, July, and August. And part of it is because I used to get off from school for those, well, for two of those months, or two and a fraction of those months. And the other part is it's usually warm. April is usually warmer than it's been this past week or two also, by the way, but gee whiz, we certainly hope that we get a good May this time. We've had some Mays in the past that have been dreary and full of rain and cold. We've had some dud Mays in the past. We hope we get a very nice one this time around. And I will probably actually go out one day during May. Only one. And if I'm lucky. And so, yes, those months, May, June, July, and August, I really like them. The light is good. The sun sets at a decent time. And, yeah, I enjoy the middle third. And I hope I get to get out for more than one day during it, this particular middle third. Yeah, I haven't been out very much. And, yeah, I haven't been out of the house in more than 6 months. But we're planning on getting my second booster shot on Monday. You may have heard us talking about that in the past, where I was going to get it on another Monday, and then I was going to get it at another time. So, yeah, I've blown two attempts to get out and get my second booster shot, and also have somebody who's a medical professional look and see, did I really dislocate my jaw? What the hell is wrong here? And so, yes, we are definitely planning to go out this coming Monday, and we hope the plans work this time. But it will be during the middle third, so I am guaranteed of getting out during the middle third this year. And I urge all of you to get out into the middle third, too. It's a great time of year. I want to talk about flow a little bit. No, not that flow. I want to talk about FLOW. And there's a piece in the May 2022 Scientific American. It's written by Rachel Berkowitz. and it talks about flow. And it seems like we all know how things flow. You see a river flow. You see water flowing down the drain. You see water flowing through the gutter in a rainstorm. We see flow all the time. But there's a lot more to it than that, and water isn't the only thing that flows. We usually think, intuitively, that if you put in more pressure, you get more flow. For instance, if you have a toothpaste tube and you squeeze it a little bit, the toothpaste comes out at a certain pace. If you squeeze it hard, you get a lot more toothpaste flowing out faster. Well, that's our intuitive thing, but it doesn't always work that way. Turns out that when flowing through porous materials, such as soil or sedimentary rock, certain fluids slow down under pressure. This is probably not too different from a Newtonian solid, which is basically something that's part water and part solid particles. Like, you can do it with sand. If you soak sand, not too much, but just enough, you will notice that it behaves in a sort of anti-intuitive way. Quicksand is an example of this, where you would think if you could thrash about enough, you could swim out of the quicksand, but you can't, because your movements actually make the quicksand grab you more. And and what you think is going to happen, well, the opposite happens. So that's an example there. Another example is various kinds of industrial things. And flowing through porous materials and things slow down under pressure, this is an issue for industry. And it says in the article, pinpointing the cause of this slowing would benefit industries such as environmental cleanup and oil extraction, where pumping one liquid into the ground forces out another. However, such movement is challenging to observe directly. And it turns out that a couple of scientists, Princeton University chemical engineer Christopher Brown and physicist Sujit Datta, have been experimenting with this. And what they did was they tweaked a special liquid and they made it transparent. And they pumped it through the pores of an equally transparent artificial rock. They documented how the liquid's movement becomes chaotic, causing swirling eddies that gum up the pores and slow the flow. And chaos theory is something we've talked about on the air since we started doing this program decades ago. And chaos theory basically says that some anti-intuitive things can happen, and that if you have certain things, even certain things in an orderly manner, they may not, the input may be orderly, the output may be very unorderly. And what they did was they used polymer solutions, which are dissolved versions of large stretchy molecule chains, and says theoretical studies have suggested that when the chains stretch through a nearly flat channel and then recoil, they generate forces that stir up those eddies. And at the eddies, of course, are turbulence. And turbulence always slows things down. That's why aircraft have to go through, for instance, wind tunnel tests, because a little bit of a something or other on the plane may cause eddies or turbulence on the plane, especially on the wing. And that can slow the plane down, can make the plane crash, all sorts of bad things. And to thwart problems with little eddies and turbulence, that's why you see on a lot of big modern jetliners, you see these little things at the ends of the wings. Some of them tip up. And you say, what is that? Is that like a fashion thing? No, those are called winglets. And they deal with the fact that the turbulence is swirling around perpendicular to the plane, and it makes the wing less efficient. And some aircraft have things that are called wing fences. And then you got a little something sticking up on top of the wing and another one sticking down below the wing at the very wingtip. And they do the same thing. They're there to fight the turbulence and make the wing more efficient, which, you know, it's not going to make the plane crash or anything. They've done without winglets for decades and decades, but it does help fuel efficiency, and airline companies are very interested in saving on fuel. So this is sort of a similar thing going on here, the turbulence of the eddies. And so they found that the polymer stretches and then contracts again, and when it contracts, it causes eddies or turbulence. The researchers pumped a synthetic polymer solution into a simulated, quote, sedimentary rock, unquote. They built the rock. And it's built from a box filled with tiny glass beads. They tweaked the polymer solution's precise chemistry by diluting it slightly to change how light refracts, rendering the so-called rock fully transparent even when fully saturated. And they looked at it, and they confirmed that the macroscale slowing had its microscopic origins where researchers had suspected, in those polymer chains stretching out and then coiling back as they passed through the pores. And the two scientists went over this, and they've figured this out, and they have more steps to do. And this could predict how much contaminant can be removed from a chemical site by injecting a solution. Because there are all these Superfund sites, and some of what they do is they inject something to get crappy stuff out of soil or something else that's over there. And physicist Sujit Datta said, quote, "Without predictability, injection operations are trial and error," unquote. So he has, the two of them, Brown and Datta, seemed to have figured this out and confirmed the computer simulation that has been coming up for a while about how this works and why it's not simple to pump liquids, certain liquids at least, through something porous. And this brought to mind to me something that relates to something I read in another magazine long ago. It was a phenomenon mentioned in at least one or maybe a couple of issues of Analog Science Fact / Science Fiction magazine. And it was maybe even, you know, 50 years ago or so, 40 or 50 years ago, I guess, there were articles about the possibility of a fifth force. Of course, this is something a science fiction, science fact magazine might very well want to examine, because some science fiction stories use a fifth force and all of that. And one piece of evidence that was being offered was that when certain processes were used to mass produce fabric or paper with ink or dye on it, there was a delay in the process, which involved rollers used in the process. And, you know, they were trying to get the ink or the dye into the rollers and then onto the either paper or fabric. And they just couldn't get the ink or the dye where it needed to go. It would bounce, sort of. And it took time. And, you know, if you have a little bit of time in your machinery, if you expect in your machinery, you put it in, it goes on. If you have it, you put it in, you wait a beat, and then it goes on, that complicates things a whole hell of a lot. Anyway, there was resistance, clearly, to getting the ink or dye onto the rollers. And this was a manufacturing process and so there was money attached to it. And since there was a lot of money to be saved by making the job go faster and maybe more simply, they put scientific research into this problem. At the time, no one could come up with a reason why there was such a delay in the process of getting the liquid forced through the rollers and onto the paper or fabric. The reason why it was being talked about in analog was because, in the absence of any regular scientific explanation, some people were putting out the idea that a fifth force that could be discovered if only they could figure out why the processes took longer than it should was at work. This was at least 20 years or more before people started talking about quintessence being the explanation for dark energy, quintessence being a fifth force. And so that has no relation to that whatsoever. So it looks like it took a while, but I think what the problem with those rollers has been figured out at this point by scientists Brown and Data. It looks like this is the thing. The ink or dye got to the rollers, and some of it went in and then backed up a little bit because it started flowing in and wiggled a bit, and that caused eddies and turbulence, and so it didn't go in. Of course, 40, 50 years ago, they didn't have the computer simulations they can do now, and that's a big part of what helped to at least produce a really good theory of why it was happening. And these two scientists figured out how to make things transparent and look at it under a microscope and say, aha, this is what happens. So there you go. We've talked about Flo, and she can't complain. And, of course, that dirty rat, Governor DeSantis of Florida, has been in the news. And he gleefully signed the Don't Say Gay law in Florida because he's an anti-gay bigot and he's a Trump Republican. And he's also a wannabe president. God, this creep becoming president. Wow, that'll be bad if that ever happens. Anyway, so the legislature passed the Don't Say Gay law and he signed it into law. And Disney said, oh, that stinks. That's not a good thing. Well, this offended him. And the dirty rat governor said, well, we're going to retaliate against you. And so he and his fellow Republicans got together. And it says they're now going to rescind the special situation that they granted the Disney World, what is it called? Disney World or Epcot Center? I think it's Disney World down there. Whatever the Disney thing is.
Yes, Disneyland is in California. Yeah, I know Disney that. World is
Disney
in Florida.
World. So Disney World is, it actually straddles two counties in Florida. And it has its own, it's basically its own kind of county. They have a fire department. They have a police department. They have all sorts of things that a government would do, that a local, small local government would do. And they get permission to do all this. And they do it. And so Governor DeSantis and his pals figured, we can get back at them. They can't say nasty things about us. You know, nasty things in this case being, God, you're a bunch of bigots. You know, they don't like being called what they really are. And so they say, we're going to rescind this. Now, it's not like Disney is the only place that has this. There's something like 1,800 little places in Florida that are basically their own counties or small municipalities or something that aren't really municipalities. And so they said, we're going to get you. Well, they passed their legislation and they say, yeah, now we're going to do them in. And when the contracts run out, when the law expires in 2023, yeah, Disney's going to be in trouble. Well, not quite. It turns out that Florida is going to have to pay their bills first. They can't just pass this and have it come into effect because there are legal consequences. There are contracts. There's a bond issue and things like that. The bond issue is the really big part, because the little item of a $1 billion bond that Florida is going to have to pay off is going to really get in the way of their attempt to screw over Disney. And, oh man, this is something here. The idea that they overlooked this. I mean, obviously, these are just vindictive, creepy people, and they want to go after people who have said something that they don't like. And so they've done this. They're going to take away something from them. Furthermore, if they ever get to do it, then the two counties that Disney World straddles, they're going to have to pick up stuff. And they're going to have to basically deal with providing fire prevention and policing and various, and I guess sewage stuff and all. They'll have to take over command of the sewers at Disney World and all the other things that Disney World is currently doing as if it were a municipality. It is amazing to me that these people who are politicians who do this kind of thing and must pay some attention to how this kind of thing works and what the details are. And some of them are lawyers. A bunch of them are lawyers. And they didn't bother to say, oh, yeah, that $1 billion in bonds, that big bond issue, that has to be paid anyway. They didn't think of that. Now, the two counties that Disney World straddles, I bet you they're kind of looking at things and saying, we don't really want this, because, you know, what happens? Are they going to get into fights because, oh, did the fire break out in this part of Disney World or that part of Disney World? And how does this work? And, you know, oh, boy, there are all sorts of questions that can come up when you've got some big sprawling thing with not just the amusements, but also a bunch of hotels and similar things. And you've got all of this in Disney World. They probably have no way of handling it. They're just these rinky-dink little counties in Florida. And, you know, most of what they do there is they have a volunteer fire department and a guy who goes out and tries to capture the alligators that keep showing up in people's yards. So, yeah, DeSantis and his pals in the Republican Party in Florida look like they have stepped in it, and they look like the fools that they are.
I think probably there are a lot of unsuited and unfit people in his administration.
Yes, just as the unqualified, unqualified judge that Trump had appointed, who has now said, oh, no, sanitation means you're cleaning things up and there's no cleaning fluid or anything involved in mask wearing, so the CDC can't do that. Of course, that's going to another court now. I mean, yeah, and she's Florida. She's from Florida, too. A lot of stupid people in Florida. And this is what we've got. Another example of stupid people running Florida. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. And you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org.
If you're near a window right now, take a look outside, because you may be able to see a lovely sight. You may be able to see Venus and Jupiter so close together. It's an amazing sight. Unfortunately, we have a lot of light pollution here in Brooklyn. And there are more planets than that lined up in the sky. But those two probably you can see. I think there's also Mars and Saturn. Mercury we'll never see. But
don't say never. I've seen it. It took effort, but I saw it once. Twice.
Well, we didn't see it the other morning when we looked out.
Yeah, on what was it, Friday morning we looked?
Yes.
We looked on Friday morning, and we could see Venus and Jupiter. And Jupiter is very far away. It's on the opposite side of the sun, I'm guessing, because it wasn't that bright, and it was kind of reddish looking. And I said, oh, there's Venus and Mars, because reddish in a planet is usually Mars. But it wasn't. We looked it up, and it was Venus and Jupiter. And we Pickles of the North said she could see Mars looking farther out along the ecliptic. I couldn't see it. I can't see these things.
Very, very faint. But it was there.
It was there.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Saturn was up there somewhere, too. We just couldn't see the damn thing. In any event, we've been having this going on for the week, but now I think this is the time. I think Saturday morning is a time when Jupiter and Venus are the closest. Is that right?
Yes. So right now.
Right now, as you're listening, So I don't know, you know, if we're boring your pants off over here, go out and look out the window or something. Or you could look out the window and have the radio on anyway and listen to us prattle on while you look at least two planets, depending on how light polluted you are. If you're not that badly light polluted, you could see more. If you have a telescope, you can also see Uranus right next to Venus. But you can't see that with your naked eye, so you would need a really good telescope, although some amateurs have those. But the thing is, Venus and Jupiter are definitely visible. If we can see them from our light-polluted place, where we've got a store that has two searchlight LEDs blasting at our windows, they're not necessary. And if we can see it with that, you can probably see those two planets too. And think about how far away Jupiter must be to be that small and dim. Oh, boy. Anyway.
I remember many, many years ago being out in the deserts of California. I think it was the Anza-Barriga Desert. And, oh, at night, the stars came out. You could see the Milky Way, and Venus was shining so brightly. I could not believe it because I'd never seen it that clear before, clearly before. Oh, it was so wonderful.
Yeah, I really only saw that sort of sight. One time I was on vacation with my parents. We went somewhere. I don't know where it was. It might have been Maryland or something. And it was we stayed at a motel, and did our usual thing of we would go to a drive-in movie for nighttime, because TV in a lot of these local places is so dreary. And we would then go back to the motel and go to sleep. And so this particular motel had like a field. It was like bizarrely done to my way of thinking. They have the road where you're in a parking lot and a place where you pay and all. And then the motel bungalows, whatever the hell they're called, they're way off in a distance. And it's totally dark. There's no light. So if there's anything to trip over, you could probably find it with your toe pretty easily. So we start walking through there, and I look up and I said, holy wow! Because there was the galaxy, which I had never seen before in my life. I don't know that I've ever seen it since like that. And everything else, and it was all up there, stuff I'd read about, and all these things. I wasn't prepared to look for a planet or anything specific. I recognized the galaxy and said, I'm really seeing it. and it was all the stars, and there was a great deal of stuff there, and I was a teenager, and I was utterly amazed, and I think that's the last time I got a really dark sky look at anything.
Oh, no, that's terrible. Jeez,
oh, yeah, it's been, what, 50, well, more than 50, but maybe 60 years since I got a good sight like that. The Evil Morlab and I went to a, we drove once, twice actually, and we ended up in the parking lot of a church in Philadelphia. The church was closed, so they didn't know we were there. And we took a pair of crappy field glasses with us, and we were able to look at the Andromeda Galaxy. It was really more like a little smudge in these tiny field glasses. And look at some other things, but it wasn't, we didn't see the galaxy. It was the wrong time of year for that, in that particular place. And we couldn't spend a lot of time there because we were concerned some moron's going to see us here and call the cops on us. And then they'll say, what are you doing here? Oh, we're looking at the sky. And, you know, they're not going to understand that stuff. So, seeing the galaxy, that was the one time of my life.
We have to get you out to the dark sky sometime. I was so lucky as a kid growing up because we had the Laurentians right there. We'd go up north on the little train of the north, le petit train du nord. Take the train up there. We'd go every summer for a couple of weeks. We go sometimes in the fall and sometimes in the winter for skating. And so that means if you were there at night, and especially in the summer and fall, you got to see that sky and you got to see, you know, the Milky Way, the arm of the Milky Way.
Especially if you're on a mountain, because there's even less air pollution.
Yes. So that was a constant to be able to see it at least for that portion of the year, to go out there and see it for, you know, a couple of weeks. That was wonderful.
So if you want to see the New York City or local area, metropolitan area version of something like that, where you can see two planets that are exceptionally bright, one of them is the third brightest thing in the entire sky after only the sun and the moon. That's Venus. Look out your window right now if you can. I mean, you may not have a view of it, whatever. It's off in the east, kind of a bit south of east, sort of south-southeast. And it should be right about now. It should be above some buildings, unless the buildings are too high where you are. That's life. At the start of every Back of the Book program, you hear Dorothy talking about not being in Kansas anymore. Well, I think a lot of people don't want to be in Kansas anymore these days. This past week, Republicans in Kansas failed to override Governor Laura Kelly's veto on an anti-trans school sports ban. The Democratic governor had called the legislation, quote, harmful to students and their families, and it's bad for business, unquote. The Kansas Senate had succeeded in overriding the governor's veto. But Republicans in the Kansas House failed to get the two-thirds majority needed to override her veto. The final vote was 81-42, three votes short of the two-thirds needed. That's good. The Human Rights Campaign, their state legislative director for Kansas and their senior counsel, Catherine Oakley, said, quote, we sincerely thank Governor Kelly for rejecting this discriminatory legislation and allowing transgender kids to be who they are. Kids! We also want to thank the 81 legislators who heard the voices of transgender kids and their families, medical experts, the business community, and advocates for fairness in sports, and voted to sustain the governor's veto, unquote. According to the Human Rights Campaign, there are more than 320 anti-LGBT plus infinity bills currently under consideration in state legislatures across the country. This is terrible stuff. I'm very glad that they managed to eke out this political victory in Kansas. A lot of very bad things were said. Allegations were made with no kind of evidence to back up what they were saying, how terrible things were. People were just making up bad stuff about trans people and about gay kids probably too. So I'm glad the governor's veto was there, and I'm glad the governor, she's a Democrat, I'm glad she did veto it. But yeah, 320 anti-LGBT plus infinity bills, or anti-gay bills, as we would have called them 50 years or so ago when I was a militant gay activist and doing all of these things here. Yes, stuff evolves. God, that's a lot. 320. Well, we still have a lot of stuff to do in this area. So the Russian invasion of Ukraine grinds on. How is this thing going to end? That's one of the questions. How is this going to end? Is Russia going to eventually take over all of Ukraine? If they do that, they'll probably move on Moldova next, because Moldova is this tiny country right next to Ukraine. It's just west of Ukraine. And, you know, if they've already got some troops in there, some Russian troops are already in Moldova. And, you know, the Russians may decide, geez, if we took over Ukraine, let's keep going. Probably Moldova won't be able to put up as much resistance as Ukraine has been able to put up, which has amazed the world, I must say. And, well, what also I think should amaze the world is how unprepared Russia is for any military adventure, despite having put gigantic amounts of money into their military, which I guess probably largely goes to pay bribes to certain people. Anyway, how is it going to end? Are they going to basically chop off the eastern side of it and say, okay, that's it, and we'll have an armistice like in Korea? Are they going to chop off the eastern end and say, well, that's it for now, but then build up the way they've been building up since they've done in 2014 when they took over parts of eastern Ukraine? I mean, maybe they'll just take over a little bit more of eastern Ukraine. And, you know, maybe they'll have that land bridge between Crimea and the rest of Russia. God. Maybe they'll settle for that and say, we'll just leave it there. We'll build up our military. And then when we feel ready, maybe another 8 or 10 years, we'll go after the rest of Ukraine again. That might not be a smart idea. I don't know that time would be on their side with that, because I think that people will start getting really ready to plaster them. In any event, there was also a development this past week. United Nations head Antonio Guterres visited Kyiv. So he visited Kyiv, Ukraine this past week, and Russia chose to bomb the city about an hour after Secretary General Guterres had held a press conference after he had toured some of the destruction in and around Kyiv, and after Guterres had condemned Russia's attacks on civilians. And so to protest his complaining about them attacking civilians, the Russians launched missiles, which hit a residential high-rise and another building in Kyiv. You know, it's kind of like, geez, you know, they're saying how terrible that you do this particular bad thing. You know, how terrible that you beat up animals in the street. And so to retaliate, you publicly beat up an animal in the street. You know, they're complaining about attacks on civilians, and in retaliation, they bomb residential buildings, a high rise. And Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, reportedly said, quote, "This says a lot about Russia's true attitude toward global institutions, about attempts of the Russian leadership to humiliate the United Nations and everything the organization represents," unquote. And then he said that the missile attack was Vladimir Putin's way of giving Guterres, quote, his middle finger, unquote. And so, yeah, this is pretty terrible stuff that they're doing here. It's it just keeps on going. They're murdering people like crazy. There are mass graves. They have portable crematoria in Mariupol because they're murdering people in the streets in these various places. Bucha, they just walked out and left the bodies all over. Now they probably say, this is making us look bad, as if the rest of it isn't making them look bad. Yes, comrade, this makes us look bad. And so what they're doing now is they have portable crematoria, mobile crematoria in Mariupol to try and get rid of the evidence of their mass murders and executions of civilians. God damn. And this past week, the first American who was involved in trying to help Ukraine fight off the Russians has been killed in combat. Willie Joseph Cancel, a 22-year-old Marine veteran who was working for a military contractor that flew him into Poland last month, is the person who died. We don't know the name of that contractor, by the way. But young Mr. Cancel leaves behind a 7-month-old son and a wife. His wife got a phone call Tuesday informing her of her husband's death. That is not a good way to get that kind of news. Again, it's not the Marine Corps, anybody. It's not Americans doing it, because in America, when your loved one gets killed, they have special people they send out to tell you about this in person, generally. This is not the way to do it, and I guess this contractor does it in their business way. Again, we don't know what the contractor is. So Mr. Cancel seems to have led a bit of a troubled life. He'd served as a Marine rifleman and was stationed in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. He had gotten a bad conduct discharge, and he'd signed up for the Marines after graduating high school in 2017, and he served until 2021 in the Marines, and then he got his bad conduct discharge. Apparently, he had disobeyed a lawful direct order, and yeah, you can't go around doing that too much. So he probably got court-martialed, and he probably, they certainly gave him a bad conduct discharge, which isn't a good thing to have. I had to watch out when I was in the Army that I didn't get caught enjoying the company of other GIs in a certain way, usually involving people not having all their clothing on, because otherwise you get a bad discharge, and oh boy, you get a bad discharge, especially years ago, and you could have a hard time ever finding work. But he went and did that. So this is a troubled young man, and now he has this young wife with a 7-month-old child, and I'm sure that company, maybe they had insurance on him, but it's not as if she's a war widow in America where she would get more. But this is what happened. He wanted to be a hero because they said he wanted to join the fire department. He wanted to be in law enforcement. He was obviously casting about for something to do that was kind of heroic. And this was something. He wanted to go fight in Ukraine and got killed. So we start off every program with our little quip about our huge number of followers on Twitter. And so that means, of course, I'm on Twitter, and I do pay some attention to it. If you want to subscribe and follow me on Twitter, believe me, I'm not going to bombard you with a lot of stuff. You'll just get a notice about the radio program once a week, and that'll be it. And you'll get to see my graphic that I throw up every time we do a program. You can also see the graphic by going to the archives at WBAI.org. So we got some other Twitter news this past week. It's not as big as the fact that we have 119 followers, but it looks like some other people have noticed it. Yeah, Elon Musk, the richest moron in the world, has bought Twitter. Now he said, oh, I want to buy it. And he had spent billions of dollars to get a percentage of it, got on their board, and then he said he didn't want to be on their board. And then he said he wanted to buy it. And they said, we're not going to let you. We're going to do the poison pill. Poison pill is where you make it so that one way or another, there are various poison pills, but their idea was to make it so that if you started buying the stock up, they would issue the stock at a low price to just everybody, and that way he wouldn't have to spend a gigantic amount of money. I've read two different things. One is that they capitulated to his original offer. The other is that he added about $3.5 billion to the original offer, and the people in charge of Twitter said, oh, that's different, and caved. Yeah, the board of Twitter decided that, yeah, that's enough money. We'll give up on that. And so they did. They have given in to him. And there's stuff that has to be gone through. I guess Securities and Exchange Commission has to deal with things. So it's not going to happen instantaneously, but it's in the works. They said, yep, we're selling to the dirty bastard. You know, I've come up with an anagram of his name. Elon Musk can also be Leon Scum. L-E-O-N-S-K-U-M. So Leon Scum owns Twitter in the near future. Sometime this year, he will be the owner of Twitter. And what we'll have then is he will own Twitter. Zuckerberg has always owned Facebook. So these two very big social media platforms are going to be owned by these guys, by these billionaire idiots. Oh, man, there's no telling what's going to happen for Musk. He's been a vaccine denier person. He was on one of Trump's committees of some sort. He's made a lot of stupid statements over the years, and this could be really, really bad. He says he's going to have more free speech. Well, this means he's going to invite back in the far right-wing bad people who are attacking others. I don't know. I hope he gets his ass sued off if he does that.
You know, we know from mythology, from folklore, fairy tales, it's never, ever a good idea when the troll owns the bridge. We know this. We know this from the Three Billy Goats Gruff. We know it from other fairy tales. And now the troll owns the bridge.
Or he soon will. There's that. I'm sure we'll be talking about Leon Scum more in the future. Well, that means that that's it for Back of the Book for this week. We'll be back next week. Next week, the planets will not be in that configuration, though. So right now, still, I think at 6 o'clock in the morning, you can still look out the window and probably still see at least Venus. I think also Venus and Jupiter, assuming it's not a cloud cover. I gotta tell you, the local TV news, when they say it's clear, you can have a tremendous cloud cover. I remember that from when I used to do astronomy on the roof of our apartment building. The way I learned was one time, yes, it's going to be completely clear tonight, by which they meant that if you're standing on the street and you're looking at something 10 blocks away, you can see it. Or from the roof of one building, you can see other buildings easily. So I took my telescope and the other stuff I had with me, and I trudged up to the roof, which I had to be very quiet about because you don't want to alert the super or anybody that you're doing this. And I went up to the roof, and what I did was I knew where the hallway on the top floor was, and I knew its relationship to the little place where you climb up onto the roof. And so what I would do is I would be very careful to walk slowly and quietly down the middle of what would be the roof of the hallway. That way I wouldn't walk over somebody's apartment where they might say, holy hell, and, you know, people start yelling about it, because I didn't want a lot of trouble with, what's this guy doing? Well, he's trying to look at the stars and planets. They're not going to buy that. And so at this time, you know, sky's supposed to be clear. They said so on the TV news. And I go over there and I set the telescope up and I get my stuff set out just right. And I look up and it's flocculated clouds. That means those clouds, they usually indicate it's going to be a storm soon, and it's little clumps of clouds. Maybe here and there you get a little bit of sky between them, but it's nothing you can really see. And oh boy, what a disaster that was. So I couldn't see anything. So I had to bundle up and go back down. Anyway, we hope that it's clear enough that you can see at least Venus and Jupiter getting very close this morning. And coming up next is
Arts Express with Prairie Miller.
We'll be back next week. It's about to be May. The middle third is here. If you can, go out and enjoy it. I would suggest you wear a mask. And above all, remember what that hoping Twitter doesn't go down the crapper for Leon Scum Dormouse said.
Give up the booze and the one night stands, and then he'll settle down.
Dr. Michio Kaku, host of Exploration, which reports on the impact of science on society, which is usually heard every Wednesday evening. First of all, Exploration is moving. That's right. From now on, it'll be broadcast on Saturdays at noon. So write that down. Mark that down on your calendar. Our time slot has been moved to Saturdays at noontime. Second, let me emphasize the importance of supporting WBAI with whatever you can afford. One way is to become a WBAI buddy, a sustaining member in the name of Exploration, for $10, $15 or more a month by calling 212-209-2950. Now, write that number down. It's 212-209-2950. 2950. Now, another way is to go to our website, WBAI.org. Click on to the WBAI button on the upper right-hand corner of the website. So please now, call 212-209-2950 or go to WBAI.org and make that pledge for social change.
Hard work is how we support ourselves and our families. The jobs we do are a big part of who we are. And our jobs keep America going, yet the job site is where we have the least power. Many of us voiceless as corporations gamble away our health and our family's future just to feed their greed. It's time for the working class majority, for you and me, to regain our voices, to turn up the volume, assert our collective power, and to organize. Join me, Rick Smith, every Saturday night from 6 to 8 p.m. right here on WBAI 99.5 New York as we bring the class war and fight for a better future. The Rick Smith Show, every Saturday night, 6 to 8 p.m. right here on WBAI 99.5 New York's listener-supported radio. For more information, visit WBAI.org.
He's cool. He's exciting.
This dude is bad.
He's sexy.
okay, maybe not. He's a bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
He's Tony Ryan on WBAI New York 99.5 FM. He's got both.
Break him with the sound of the trumpet.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
He's got classic soul. He's okay, I can't think of anything else.
I'm Tony Ryan. Tune in Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Soul Central Station with Tony Ryan.
99.5 WBAI.
This is Phil Donahue. I have 600.